how it works out. Okay. All right. So we were in the middle of this story that we can maybe title as Nechash HaNechashes. Rona's telling everybody, so we have to listen. That's it. That's it. So this fiery snake made of copper, right, as we said. So just very quickly, what I'd like you to do in your sheet, so it's page 252. Just quickly, we'll just look at it. We read the psukim, but I just want to quickly review the main psukim. On page 252, I just want to show you in English, right, the Jewish people were upset, and they said, why have you brought us up from Egypt to die in this wilderness? And they were saying it to both Moshe and to Hashem. They were complaining, for there is no food and there's no water and our soul is at its limit with the insubstantial food. Remember, we used that word, belechem akleikel, the insubstantial food. As we said, they were upset. They were traveling. They felt the month doesn't give them enough energy for their journey. Then in Pasuk Vav 6, Hashem sent the snakes, the burning ones, against the people, and they bit the people, and a large multitude of Israel died. And then on the next page it says, the people came to Moshe and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against Hashem and against you. And they asked, pray to Hashem that he remove from us the snakes. Moshe prayed for the people. And we see what happens. Hashem said to Moshe, make yourself a burning one and place it on a pole. It's interesting. Aselecha Saraf. Saraf is a burning one. He doesn't specify a burning snake, but obviously he meant in that shape. And it will be that anyone who has been bitten will look at it and live. And in English and in Hebrew, the word that he uses is Vira'a Isai, look at it and will live. And then that's what Hashem says to Moshe. Then we find Vayas Moshe, and Moshe made the snake. And what did he make the snake of? He made, as we saw, a snake of copper. That's Nechash Nechashes, a snake of copper, and placed it on a pole. So it was that if the snake bit a man, he would stare at it. You see, interesting, there's a different word here, not see it, but you see, Vehibit, he would stare at it. And what will happen? What would he stare at? He would stare at the copper snake, and he would live. That's the end of the psukim. Remember, we discussed the Rashis, we mentioned, and I said we have to start today to look at some of the commentaries inside to understand what's happened. There was a lot of small questions that came up along the way, and one of the basic ones here is why... I know, what is it? It looks like a snake. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting that you say that. I think it's based on this. I think you're right. Because I think it's based on this story in the thing that this causes healing. So it has that to do with this. That's a fascinating... Could be interesting. So it probably based on this thing. Because this fiery... Exactly. This copper... Exactly. It's the snake of healing. Exactly right. Fascinating. And so we have to understand how this works. The main question really is, why is this story so different? In other words, every time in the desert, they did something wrong, they got punished. And usually, if they asked for forgiveness, Hashem would provide some form of forgiveness, some form of way of remove the plague. Here, there's something different. There is this piece, that this actual physical object that's made, that they have to actually look at, and then they become healed. So there's an extra step here. That's one thing. And obviously the question then becomes, well, this is strange. It sounds like a bit of a, I don't know what you want to call it, but like a pagan kind of thing. It sounds like an idol almost. It's very not the normal way of a Jew, in a sense, that we are used to. It's not our approach. Usually we daven and we believe that Hashem is beyond any physical forms, or we don't believe in looking at physical forms. So what's going on? So that's what we have to understand. What's the story here? What's the reason? What's the logic? And what's the depth for us? What do we learn from it? Because this is eternal, as we say. Torah is eternal. So let's see today. I really hope, I mean, I'm not going to rush. I know I sometimes rush. It's not a good idea to rush, but I'll try to get through a few beautiful ideas. And hopefully a little bit will be settled, even if we don't manage to do it all. But I hope we'll manage so that we don't leave with too many questions for the month. Okay, before we go inside, I just want to share one thing that the Evan Ezra says. I didn't make you a copy of it. It was over a few pages. But the Evan Ezra, because the Evan Ezra brings a little bit similar to the Ramban, but I just want to read you the last four words that the Evan Ezra says, because he goes through a whole thing how some people make a mistake and they think this is like some kind of a charm and that people will look at it and that's what causes the healing. Of course, it can't be true. That's not possible. This is not witchcraft. This is not some kind of astrology. This is not that type of a thing. And the last four words that he says, and this is like sort of his approach, he says, "Va'emes ki niskiva mimenu da'as elyon," that the logic or the depth of the way Hashem understands things is way above ours. In other words, we have no idea. We can't begin to understand it. For some reason, this is how Hashem wanted to provide this healing, and it actually has no place in any rational way. It's just Hashem's tool at this moment. Okay, it's above us. So this is an approach. It's an important approach because the truth is that not only this story, but all our stories, we know that even when we think we understand, do we really understand? Of course we don't. It's not possible for us to understand because if we can understand it, well, then that's limited to human logic. I mean, I hope that our God is way beyond the human, so obviously we can't understand. But sometimes Hashem does us a favor and he allows us to have insight and to feel that we're grasping some of it. And sometimes he gives us things that we know are way beyond, and this is one of them. Okay, that's one way. Now, on your, I don't know what page, but it looks like this is a number one on the top. This one we have to do inside. This is the Ramban. We're going to do two of them inside, and then the rest will, whatever, we'll skim. Do you see it? The Ramban. So Ramban is Nachmanides, and he gives us a fascinating insight as we were going to start last week. Now, again, I didn't bracket exactly where I want to start, but it's not right at the top. It is, let me just see. Okay, so if you look at 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from the top of the first column, it's quite simple. In the middle of the line, it says, "Vahanire be'enai." So it appears to me in my eyes. This is what the Ramban says. This is what appears to me. Besoid hadavar hazeh, in the secret, so to speak, to understand the depth of this matter. Kihu midarke hatayra. This is the way of the Torah. Shekol ma'aseha neis b'seich neis. The Torah works miracle within a miracle. It's not enough just a straightforward miracle. Miracle within a miracle. What does that mean? So, heisir hanezek bimazik. And this is the general term, that we remove the damage with the thing that causes the damage. V'tirapa hachayli bimachalia. And you heal the sick with the illness. That's a general terminology that he's using, and we'll have to, he's going to develop that now to understand what does that mean. And he gives a few examples. We have other stories in the Torah where we had the same thing. Hashem showed him a tree, and this was in actually Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The water was bitter, and Hashem showed him a tree, and what did he do? It was a tree, it was a branch from a bitter branch. And he took the bitter branch and he threw it into the bitter water. And what happened to it? The water became sweet. So what did he use? Not a sweet branch, a bitter branch to throw into the bitter water and somehow make the water sweet. Okay, that's one example. And Melach Elisha, there's a story with Elisha Hanavi. Elisha was the prophet after Elio Hanavi, and it was just after Elio passed away. And Elisha had just actually, he was devastated, but he was in the area of Yerichai. And the people there started to complain to Elisha, and they said, we have this well that's actually causing people to be sick. The water is really off and there's something wrong. Can you please help us? And what does Elisha do? It says he had to put salt into the water. And we know that putting salt into water makes water even worse. What we do is we desalinate water. We don't add salt. We try to take out salt. And yet what he did was he put salt into the water, and that made the water, Hashem made a miracle, and the water became drinkable. Okay? Another case where, again, we're using something the opposite, in a sense, almost, to cure. And he says, and then he gives other examples. V'yedeya midarkei harefuas, and it is known. Now he gives a very general idea. It is known from the way of healing. So if you want to say the medical approach. Shekol neshuchei balei ha'eres. That anybody who has been bitten by a poisonous creature, whether it be a snake or a spider, whatever it is, that is poisonous. And what happens to them? Yistaknu, they will be in danger, bir oisam, oisam, oi bir oist musam. After they've been bitten by this snake, let's just say, or something else that's poisonous, if they see that same type of animal again, or even if they don't see it in real, they just see a picture of it, it actually causes them to be in danger. Now, whether this is 100% true nowadays or not, I'll tell you the truth. What I feel from the Ramban is that I think he's saying it physically, and I think now we'll say it psychologically. That's what I'd say. That the anxiety that it induces, and as we would call it, the trauma, as we talk about now, and now they say that the trauma is relived and re-experienced, right? They have all this research. You might even explain it that way. But whichever way you want to explain it, if you were bitten and then you see the form, it's going to cause you much more damage. You'll be actually to the point that it's life-threatening. That's what the Ramban says, even if you survived the first time. And then he says, and he goes on, and he gives an example. Adki, neshuchei hakelev hashayit. There's somebody who's been bitten by a dog, like with rabies. I don't know how you call it. You know, just rabies. That's right. Okay. In those days, especially, it was extremely scary when that happened. As says, kelev hashayit, right? Because rabies, we know, caused the person afterwards to act crazy. That's what it would do to the person. Anyways, v'chein shar ha-behemais hashayites, and any other animal that would have had such an illness, im yabitu b'mayim, if they would stare at water, yire lahem sham b'vayas ha-kelev ay ha-mazik v'yamusu. They would see in the water a reflection as if the dog is coming, or whatever it was that had harmed them, and they would die. Interestingly, I looked up, I mean, again, nothing. This is not, you know, things have evolved in the medical world and in the scientific world. But one fascinating thing that I saw with rabies is that one of the things that it caused was actually a fear of water. Not just a fear, but obsession, a crazy fear. And sometimes that would actually cause the person to die because they couldn't even drink water. They would almost choke. That's how much the fear would be. Because the rabies played on the mind. That's what it went to, the infection or whatever, I don't know what you call it, went to the mind, actually. And one of the things, I'm not sure if that's what the Ramban's referring to, but it seems to be that also you might even say on a simpler level that the person is so obsessed with what happened, so devastated, like it's so traumatic, that all he could do is think about it. And if he sees anything, even a reflection of it, then it like right away puts him back into that, you know, whatever, and it causes such terrible damage. Okay, so then he goes on and he explains, Kamaisha Kasav B'Sifrei HaRefuos, and then he brings from, he says, if you look into medical books, also it's written in the Gemara, Maseches Yoma, and actually the doctors guard them, not to mention in front of the person that animal that had bit them. So you don't even mention the word. Nowadays we have a different forms of therapy, right, that we try to desensitize the person, but whatever it may be, because if you do mention it, it can cause terrible harm. Okay, and then he says the person shouldn't remember them, klal ki nafsham. And this is where you see it psychological, beautiful. He says, "Ki nafsham tidabek b'machshava ahi," because what will happen is the person's mind will cleave to that thought. In other words, it will become literally obsessed with it and unable to get it out of their mind. And what will happen, he says, and then what will that cause? The loit tiparid mimena, he won't be able to separate from it. Klal at shetamis aysam, until it actually kills them. Again, on a simple level, we might even say the anxiety actually can overwhelm and kill the person. The person is so obsessed by that which he has suffered, and nothing else, he can't think of anything else. So what we do is we try to stay clear of the subject. That's the best way to divert, so to speak, and not to mention that which had harmed you. That's the best way for healing. We're going to get to why he's mentioning this here. And then he goes through a whole thing. This part, okay, I'll just read this quickly. And I say, this is, I don't know, whatever. Well, you'll interpret it how you want. I'll show you what he says. He says, "Ukvar iskiru davar menusa miplois hatulda." It's already been mentioned, this like wondrous thing, and it's like he calls it sort of a scientific kind of thing. Ki noshuch hakelev hashoita acharei shenishtate becheliyai, that somebody who's been bitten by this dog that's ill, that has this rabies, after, and the person actually starts to develop the symptoms. Im yikubal hashesen shalai, if you take his urine, bekliz chuchis, in a glass jar, yira b'shesen demoskurei haklovim ktanim, you'll see these small dogs, like a image as if there's small dogs there. V'im taver hamayim b'matlis, but if you try to strain the water, in other words, it looks like there's dogs there, but when you strain it, you see there's nothing there. It's just imagination, I don't know. Lo timtza bahem shum roshem, you won't find anything. And then when you return the urine, lekliat, and we're on top of the second column, lekliat schuchis, v'yishto sham kisha, and when you put it back into the glass and you leave it there for an hour, tachzar v'tirisham gurei haklavim, you'll see those image of those little dogs again, mitoarim, it looks like they're there. Okay, v'zeh emesu, and he says it's truth, in the ways, the wonders of the way Hashem made the soul. Okay, whatever may be. It doesn't matter if that's true or not true. The point is, though, that one thing we do know, that if somebody suffered a terrible trauma, you don't go over to them and just talk about that thing over and over again, right? Somebody was bitten by a dog simply. You don't talk about dogs all day to them. That obviously what, unless you're the right professional and in the right setting, otherwise what you're going to do is definitely continuously traumatize them, right? That we know. The best thing is not to talk about that. So he goes on and he says like this, and therefore, if that's the case, if this is the case, so the Jewish people who have now been bitten by these snakes, hasrafim, these burning fiery snakes, that best thing would have been that they shouldn't see a snake. We shouldn't mention it. And it shouldn't come into their heart at all. Right? They shouldn't be paying attention. What does Hashem command? Exactly the opposite. To make the image of this fiery serpent, whom Mamemis Isam, the one that killed them. And he describes how they would have looked, these little serpents. They had like these red fiery eyes. So they have like a wide head, and they have this body that's like sort of, I don't know if you want to say sort of like bright or something, like the color of copper, whatever it may be, on their neck. So that's why Moshe made it out of copper, just to look like that which had bitten them. So he's trying to make the image as similar to that which they had been hurt by. And now he says like this, so if you would have made it out of a different material, it might have looked like a snake, but it wouldn't have looked like those fiery serpents. And thus we understand, copper has that look of a sort of fiery kind of a look. So it makes sense for him to make it with that material. The reason why the Ramban mentions this, his question is because Hashem didn't command him to make it out of copper. If you notice in the command, it doesn't say that anywhere. And only Moshe did it. And why? So that's why the Ramban says, because Moshe wanted to follow as even more than what Hashem said, to do exactly how Hashem wanted. It should look exactly like that which bit them. So that's why he thought that material was the right one chosen. There are other opinions that it just sounds right, right? Because nachash and nachashas are the same word. So it makes sense to make it out of this kind of copper, because that's the word of the snake. Okay, anyway. But now, I just want to come back to the point that he's making here. As he says, and that's Umasha Amrum in Aloshan HaNoifel Aloshan, people who talk about this idea, I just said that it sounds similar, right, that the word fits. Ki Askaras Hashem Bilvat Tazik, because just mentioning the name would also cause harm, because now we're doubling the effect. Not only does it look like a snake, but if somebody tells you to look at it, and they say, look at the nechash hanechashes, right? So what does that mean? You're doubling that word. You're hearing the word snake twice, and it's really going to shake you up. Okay, then he says, v'haklal, ki tziva Hashem. This is really where he puts his answer in a nutshell. She yisrapu b'mazik hameimis b'teva. That Hashem commanded that they should be healed through that which naturally causes the damage, the asud musay ushmay, and make the image and its name, ukisheyia ha'adam mabit bekavana el nechash anachishes. And when the person would, as we said, there's a difference between looking and actually concentrating. When the person concentrates and starts to contemplate on this copper, you know, so to speak, serpent, shehu ke'ein hamazik, which is very similar to that which bit them and caused them this damage, legamrei hoyachai, he would live. And here we have the words, all in five words, lahaydiyam, to tell them, ki Hashem meimis umechaye. Who makes you live? Who makes you die? Only God.
It is God who causes life. It is God who causes death. It is not the snakes. It's not the anything. It's only Hashem himself. And this was the message. And we'll develop it in a minute, but you can see that Hashem Dafka wants it to come about through that which caused the harm should be that which actually causes the healing. Just to show them, all from God. So it's actually quite magnificent and a very fascinating idea, fascinating insight. Go to the next page and I'll show you how the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh gives lots of different explanations. And as with Orach Chaim, he's a little bit more philosophical. And I mean, the Ramban is also philosophical, but he's more philosophical in the way that he also gives us clearly how we can apply it. So let's see what that means to us. And many, he's going to give a lot of reasons. So let's see. But we'll go through a few of them quickly. He starts at the beginning, the paragraph that says, V'ta'am. See, it's the third paragraph. V'ta'am kol ha'maisa, the reason for this whole story to happen, nira behayir oid, we will understand it by looking deeper, sort of in the insights. Lama loy ha'ila tfilosoy shel maisha, right? We have to understand, behayir oid, he's saying we're going to bring up another question. Why is it that Maisha Rabbeinu is davening, lahasir ha'nachashim asrafim? Why wasn't that enough to remove them? Usually, as we saw with the other stories, Moshe would daven to Hashem and the danger would disappear or they would be healed or whatever it may be, things would get better. And over here, it wasn't enough, right? Hashem said you have to do something. And that's what we have to understand. What's unique in our situation? They shouldn't have had to be bitten, and then need to be healed. Elavadai zayagid kibal hamishpat Bochan, must be that the ultimate judge, what did he realize? What did he discern? Shalai osu tshuva hamaspekes lahem. They didn't do enough tshuva. And we saw that in the psukim. When they came to Moshe, they came out of desperation. They came when the snakes were biting them, right? And they were dying. So they said, please get rid of it. He says, it's not enough. That wasn't a real tshuva. That's what Hashem felt. Hashem discerned in their heart. And therefore, he wanted them to go through some kind of a process. And that's obviously what's happening here. This is a healing process, not just physically, but more importantly, spiritually as well. That's why we have to understand how. Okay, so then he goes on and he says, "V'hagam she'amru chatan," even though they said, "We have sinned, ki dibarnu b'Hashem b'bach," that we've spoken against you and against God. He says, it's not enough. Ha'ikar chaser, the main thing is missing. V'hu ha'aziva. They weren't really leaving their previous behavior yet, and Hashem knew that. They were still stuck in the previous mindset, and that's a problem. We don't find that they didn't say, all they said was we sinned, but they didn't say we won't speak bad again. No, they didn't say that. So obviously they weren't ready to leave their negative behavior yet. And that's why, Hashem didn't just remove the plague from them instantaneously. Okay, now I just want to see. So let's go on to where I have a number one over here. He says, "V'ibatatem le'nachash," and the fact that they had to look hard at the nachash, what does that show us? That shows us seven things. So the first one, he's going to give different answers. We'll see different ways to understand it. The first one is, tshuvas hageder al zahaderech, how we're going to understand how that's going to help them to get to that tshuva process. Hine mi goyrem lenachash lenashach. Who causes the snake to bite? Who chait bnei adam? Okay, so this is a philosophical idea that we're not going to go to too much length today, but in Torah we do have, I know we don't like to dwell on this too much, but we do have a concept that when something negative happens to us, a person, we don't know the ways of Hashem, and we definitely don't look at another person and judge. But when we're experiencing something, and if somebody, like he says, gets bitten by a snake, perhaps he has to analyze why that happened. Now, sometimes you think, I just stepped in the wrong place. There happened to be a snake there. No, there must be something more. And perhaps it means that I have to start to analyze what am I doing right and what I can fix. Okay? And as he brings the pasuk, the famous pasuk, it's a pasuk in Koheles, Im yoshach hanoshach b'leilochash, is it possible that the snake will bite without it being charmed? In other words, without it being directed by Hashem, obviously that's not going to happen. So why am I getting bitten? What's going on here? And therefore he says, as he says, "Kishein lachash yasan nachash doimim kenachash." And if there's no charm, so in other words, if there's no instruction for the snake to bite, what happens is The snake just stands still, doesn't do anything. You can walk by. And we know this in life, like we say, most of the time, Baruch Hashem, we go through our day and nothing bad happens. Baruch Hashem. And then like we say, why today did I have the flat tire? Why, you know, the silly things. But why today did it? Sometimes it happens. And why didn't it happen? The truth is, really, the question is, why didn't it happen the other 364 days? But we don't ask it that way. So why today? Obviously, it's not the punkt today I drove my tire over that nail. I could have driven the tire over the nail yesterday too, but I didn't. There must be a reason. So that's what he says over here. This is the first thing, to get them to shake up a little bit and to start to analyze and to introspect and think, oh, what's happening? What's going on? Okay, so that's the first shake up, as he says. And this is the idea to tell us, let me just see. Oh, and as he says that we should also be silent, but we'll see. I think he gives in another place more about that, the silence of the snake. Okay. And this is how they're going to leave their sin. In other words, that if they wouldn't have spoken negatively against Moshe and against Hashem, the snake would have also remained silent and wouldn't have opened its mouth and bit them, would have remained still. And that's what we should be doing. We should be zipping our mouth and not talking badly. And this will help them, not only that they acknowledge that they've done something wrong, but also for the future to behave in a better way. Okay, that's the first one. Next one. Number two, he says, Lahakir chetam. Hashem wants them to recognize their sin. And this is where we get to this a little more. Because he says like this, that it says in the Zohar, Chavya de mekananam b'migdola shehu samachmem hanimshal lenochosh shepita tchila la'adam. We know, what's the first cause of everything? I mean, besides the moon. The next cause, the real first cause, we say, was the snake. He caused all the negativity, right? Because he came and he tried to influence Chava. When he influenced Chava, that's what we say. And then she influenced Adam and everything went downhill from there. So we say like this. First, he says, V'huma shemeyer nochash b'mokim gavoya. This is what we reflect upon when we see the snake in a high place. Sheyakiru, that we should recognize. Shehim siba b'mashe dibru loshen hara. Specifically, the fact that they spoke loshen hara. Lahachnis nochash b'mokim gavoya. They've put the snake in a high place. Gam she'osu ma'ase nachash, the fact that they're acting the way the nachash acted, they're doing the actions of a nachash, nachash which is lashon hara, b'makim elyain, in a high place, she'dibru be'elekim, because not only is lashon hara ordinary, but it's lashon hara against something which is way above, which is Hashem.
Hello.
Sorry, you know, let me, sorry, I didn't.
How are you?
Mute everybody today, sorry. To find, where are we? I'm not sure if I know how to do it. Okay, 1 second. I have to just stop the share for a minute.
That's what we need to talk to. It's really hard. I think the electrician was there, you think?
There we go. Okay, now it'll be quiet. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Good. Okay, sorry. Okay, so that's what he says. That's what they were doing. They were talking Lashon Hara against who? Not just Tam, but Lashon Hara against Hashem. Okay, let's go to the next one. The next one is also number three. What is it? This is also, this is a beautiful one. He says, they have to reassess and realign their priorities. What does that mean? He says, they sometimes put importance on the wrong things, on the physical things, on the material things, instead of valuing the more spiritual things. How does this teach them that? So he says like this, Ki nachash shelamata meinis. The snake that's down here on the ground, that kills, right? When it bit you, the poison would have killed you, he says. V'nachash elyayin mechaye. But the snake that's up above, that's the one that brings life. So now, what are you meant to train your eye? To look up, to look at the things that bring life. What brings life? The things from Hashem bring life, not the physical things, not the material things. As he says beautifully, he says that the ubazei yargishu, and this also very specific to what they did wrong, they will feel asher dibru ra al hamon habo min hashamayim. What were they talking? Remember what was specifically? The lashon hara was the mon that comes from the heavens. What did they say? We want, you know, lechem akleikel, they called it, this insubstantial bread. and we want this physical bread. Why do you want the physical bread? That kills, as we know, oybei. So better to have the spiritual bread, as he says, shehulechem akleikel, ubeichrim belechem asher taitzi, haritvash, they choose the bread that comes from the ground. Sha'aleim ne'mar, and it says on them, hay aimrim al ha-toiv ra, al ha-ra toiv. That's how Yeshayahu puts it. They say about what's really good, they say it's bad, and what's really bad, they say it's good. So you have to just reshift everything now. Start to look at everything totally the opposite to the way you were looking at it up until now. So that's another lesson. Then the Aruch Chaim says number four. He says also to bring them, to awake them, to do tshuva. How? Masha hisramu lama hiviyam Hashem. Now we talk about, because besides for the bread, they also complained that Hashem took them through the desert. And what do we know in the desert? She'ein sham sipuk. Generally speaking, there's no supplies in the desert. Why did Hashem take us a different route? A place that you can find bread. Normally, easier. And this is such a beautiful one. I know we've mentioned it and it comes through a lot. But it's again to retrain them to understand, where do we truly get everything from? We know it all comes from Hashem, but we don't like to be dependent on that. We want to just say, thank you, Hashem, but we want a little bit of control, right? So we wouldn't mind that there is a Kohl's next door that we can buy our food, that we don't have to sit in our house and daven, Hashem, please make the mon come from the heavens. We want to be able to go shopping and buy it. This is what they wanted. They wanted it to be in a way that's normal, as we say. But really, Hashem wants our eyes to be directed to heaven. Al michyosam, for their bread, al kol tzarchem, and all their needs. Ain mi betach lusay, and not trust in anything else. Me'atam atzmei shalei heiser and achashim ve'nicham le'nashcham. We see that's what Hashem did himself. Till now, he didn't leave the snakes to bite them, right? He held the snakes back from biting them. The snakes were there the whole time, the whole 40 years, because they were traveling through the desert for 40 years. They didn't just all of a sudden appear. These are not snakes that Hashem made appear all of a sudden. They were there the whole time, but Hashem held them back. Beautifully, Nechama Leibowitz has a beautiful thing, because she explains that even the wording in the pasuk shows us that the way Hashem did it, it's not that he didn't like remove the snakes. He says it's like all of a sudden make them disappear. The fact is that they were there, but up until then he was holding them back. That's a very big difference. And what that means is, as we said, the miracle was the whole time. Every day as we go through our day, we have to realize the miracle is that things are working. Not when things don't work, we should say, oh, why doesn't it work? The question is, why did it work till now? That's really the question. Why weren't they bitten till now? Because Hashem was preventing up until now the snakes from harming them. Okay, then he says, v'yu misrapim kishi, and then they will be healed when they look klapei maila, up above, la avihem shabashamayim, to their father in heaven. And that's what we say. Another beautiful thing. He says like this. So this is a very beautiful lesson. He says, Ela shalai pirshu ha'ara b'shabadavar, shi tshuva l'divrei lashon hara shadibru, lama heviyem el hamidbar. The pasuk doesn't tell us 100% clearly how it addresses the part. It addresses the part that they, you know, that they spoke lashon hara about the bread. But what about the lashon hara about going into the desert? Shehashem chafetz bazeh, and Hashem wanted this. Kedei sheyeh libam tamid be'ein hefsik karayv l'Hashem. And here he says such a beautiful thing. He says what we have to realize is, and it's also in life, sometimes when you just look at something superficially or for a moment, it looks uncomfortable. It does. It doesn't look 100%. In other words, you say, I could choose a better way for it to happen. But when you stop and think for a moment, you realize that there's something so incredible that's happening. And in this story, you see it very much. What was it? Here they were going through the desert. And they didn't go. They could have gone through this five-star, I don't know, wonderful road, you know, with motels, five-star hotels all along the way, and the best restaurants all along the way. And instead, they went through a desert with snakes, with scorpions, everything, right? Why? Why? And this is such a magnificent thing. He says, because it brings us closer to Hashem. Keben hamitzape l'shulchan aviv erev avayker b'chol eis v'zman. We realized, whose table are we eating at? Hashem's table, not our table. It's God's table, morning and afternoon. When we wanted the mun, we knew it had to fall every single day. And where does it come from? Directly from Hashem. it's like a parent, you know. As parents, I think we understand it more as we get older. And the children travel and they go away. But when they, what do we want? We want them to want to come home. We want them to want us. We want them to call us. And when they do, and when they remember us, as we say, that gives us the most incredible, yeah, that's the biggest joy, the biggest love, the high. And that's what Hashem wants. He inculcated that to us in the desert. The best thing is to be at the table of your father, better than the biggest five-star luxury hotel. Be with your father, be with me. So if you sometimes need to ask for something, it's because Hashem wants us to ask for that. He wants that communication. And that's why sometimes he might make it a little bit more difficult for us to get it, so we should have to ask for it. Because he wants to hear our voice. He wants us to be close. And this is a very important lesson that we see also from this idea, that that's what they, in a sense, that's what Hashem was trying. But now, unfortunately, they didn't learn it enough, so we needed an extra bonus, an extra lesson over here. And here they have to look up. And that's what he says. That's why, let me just see, v'im ha'yam v'im derech yishav. So if he would bring them in a way that was, you know, settled, loy ha'yisa lehem hadveikus b'tmidis, they wouldn't be constantly thinking about Hashem, k'sheyiyem ezuman l'fneyem sipukam, when everything was ready before them all the time, ma'am ba'od yisuv davrezeh ha'chakas ha'lev me'akaris ha'shkochas ha'bayrei, v'yiras rei me'musa. And this would have actually, what would have caused, was that their heart would have been more distant from recognizing the supervision of Hashem. So in other words, this doesn't address as much the snake over here as the sin that they did here in not recognizing the kindness of Hashem. Instead, they were complaining and not recognizing that this was a real tremendous chesed, that Hashem dafka did it so that they should always be feel close to Hashem. And that's what Hashem really wants from us. Now, obviously, one way we could say is you look up, you remember where everything comes from. Comes from Hashem. That's the real idea. But let's go a little more. That's why each one adds a little more different angles. Then he says, and also the fact that, what did they do? They complained about the desert, as we said, that, what was the problem with the desert? What was their complaint? Shekavanasam hi she'ein seimchen al anes. Okay, so he says, we have an, even in Yiddishkeit, we do have this idea that we don't rely on a miracle. Right? The truth is, we're not meant to live relying on miracles. That's true. But in this situation over here, they needed to have a little bit more faith, and that is like this. He says, why? Why don't we rely on a miracle? Mitam she'ein hanes masmid. Usually we say we don't rely on a miracle because a miracle doesn't always happen, right? So you don't take that chance because you don't know if the miracle is going to happen this time. Why am I going to take the risk? That's why what people sometimes do, because it's unsettling to have to rely on a miracle. So what do people sometimes do? They try to analyze and to rationalize. And even things that are like really no question miraculous, they try to find a way that it's natural. Like an example, I think nowadays would be the state of Israel. I mean, the fact that it exists is a miracle. There's nothing to talk about. But some people might say, oh, it has the best army in the world. Well, that's true, but that's not why it exists. Because if in a minute it could be not here, chas v'shalom. So we know we have to rely on miracles. But it's very, very insecure, that feeling. It's much more secure to say, oh, we have the best army, so we have nothing to worry about. And that's why people do that. And here, Hashem is telling us, don't try that. It doesn't work. That's not what works. The snake kills, the snake heals. It's up to me what will happen. And you have to always internalize that. Constantly. So that's how he brings it very beautifully. So then he says like this, the last has a double dance, so people try to make it natural. Right? All the things that change are, as he says, they're not constant. But the truth is, a Jew has to live in a certain way with the realization that our lives are miraculous. This was a mistake. The ones who were speaking, and he says like this, that what? What was the mistake? Despite the number five, lazet tziva Hashem lasais neis kavua. Now, this is a very beautiful one. We can see why this shows us this idea more. As we're saying now, I think that's a perfect example. So the state of Israel is there. When we stop and think, most of us realize it's just miraculous. Every minute is a miracle, right? There's no question every second that we're here is a miracle. What do they do here in this story? They take this copper snake, and what do they do with it? They hang it, he suspends it, right? Moshe Rabbeinu puts it on a pole. But people who are looking from a distance, what does it look like? It looks like it's just suspended in midair.
which is a miracle. Nothing can be suspended in midair. Okay, it was on a pole, it's true. But the look was, the pole was thin, and there was this big fiery serpent of copper, and it looks like it's just hanging there, and it stays there. That's a constant miracle. Realize that sometimes things can be suspended in midair for a long time, as long as Hashem wants it to be. That's how long it will be there, even though that's not the norm. Normally it should fall down. But if Hashem doesn't want it to fall down, it won't fall down. And that's also such a magnificent idea. That's why he had to do it this way. So again, all of these things really bring home the change of attitude, like big time, of how we're meant to view everything. Okay, let me just see if there was one more, number seven, number six. Okay, oh, number six also, he says that the concept that we have to learn is also the power of tshuva. How do we see the power of tshuva? That what happens to a Baal tshuva, that his sins become not only forgiven, but they actually get transformed to merits. How do we see that? Because, and he says, because not only does Hashem like forgive you, so to speak, and it's you know, it stands, it helps you along, you know, that you should have good things afterwards, but also that the sins that you've done get transformed. How do you see that in this story? Because what's causing the healing? The actual thing that initially caused the damage. So too, the sin, so to speak, that caused the damage, now not only will it be forgiven, but it will actually be used as part of your merits, as we say. There's a whole explanation how that works, because what causes you to change is that discomfort. And where did you get that discomfort from? Because you did something wrong. So the actual thing that you did wrong is what's causing you to change. And therefore, it becomes now, it's changed over from the list of the negatives to the list of the positives almost, and it becomes a schus for you. So the snake, the actual snake that bit you and that caused you harm, that represents the lashon hara and the snake, now if you do tshuva, now it becomes part of your good things, and it could actually bring you tremendous healing. So another very powerful thing. That's why it's done that way. And number seven is, as we say, that every individual, it's also a big one, every individual has to recognize their individual miracles that happen to them. He says, each individual has to look up, right? And he has to recognize the miracle, and he has to know that Hashem supervises him individually. Because had Moshe just said, everybody should be healed, right? Daven to Hashem, and then it would be like a general healing, right? Everybody would be healed together. Here, every person themselves had to think, look up hard, right? And think about what they've done, and think about how they want to reconnect to Hashem, and realize that Hashem provides me with my specific healing. So there is a specific supervision and a specific connection that I have with Hashem. So that's another important thing that was a little bit different in this story here. Okay, you believe in miracles. That's good. Baruch Hashem. Well, Rona, yeah, I know. It's true. It's true. It's that's the only way we're here. Yeah, it's incredible. I want to just tell you, as I said, because I don't want to leave you, that there's other beautiful things. This one, we're not going to read it all inside, but on the next page that you have in your booklet, you have from the Nesivas Shalom. And he also gives us a whole beautiful insight of the whole change of attitude. So he gives a little bit of a different angle to it. And he says, what's the root of the problem here? What was the issue? So I'll show you. I just want to read you one paragraph. At least, oh, it's a crooked everything here. On this one, it's crooked, but by you, it's not. Let me see. Okay, so what was the problem? The problem was to understand, first of all, what they were doing wrong here. So he says, what they were doing wrong was, I don't know if you, which paragraph is this. It's the third paragraph. He says, what was like the terrible negative thing? They didn't accept the will of Hashem and the way Hashem conducts the world, so to speak, and their lives. And what do we mean by that? Because as we said, they were complaining, why did they take us out of the into the desert, and there's no food, and there's no bread, and whatever. Why? They said they weren't complaining, they were hungry. They didn't say we didn't have what to eat, we didn't have what to drink. They didn't like the food. Not that they said, you didn't give us food. It's not like the child comes home, they say, what? They don't say, is there supper? What's for dinner? Oh, you know, I hate it. They don't say, what's for dinner? They expect you to give them supper. But then they complain about what you're giving them. So he says a very powerful thing. This is an incredible thing that unfolds human nature. What we do many times in life is, we know Hashem is giving us lots, But we're not so excited with the way it's panning out. We have a different view of how our life should be. We don't want to be in this place on Rosh Hashanah, or we want this to be happening like this, or we want, I don't know, everything as we know in life. We have lots of good ideas about things. We think somebody should get married at this stage. We think this person should marry. We think a lot of things. We think we know best for everything. So the Nesivas Shalom says this was the problem. The problem was that they were not able to accept what Hashem was doing for them, and that the way Hashem sets it out is right. That you have to accept with love and with joy what Hashem gives you. And he brings a lot of examples for that. He says that that's how you can see. I don't want to see the examples. Let me just see. He says, like, he gives a very beautiful example. So we read it on Rosh Hashanah. It's good. The Akedah, right, for the Avram Avinu. He says, what's the big deal? What was so special about what Avram did? If Hashem would ask us, you know, we would all do. He says, what did Avram do? He accepted it with love. Even though Hashem had promised him, this is the son that's going to, you know, bring you lots of generations, and you're going to become a great nation, and now he's going to take, and he's going to take the son on the Akedah. There won't be a son left. There definitely won't be any generations. So how could he do this? But it doesn't matter. He didn't ask. If this is what Hashem wants now, I'll do what Hashem wants now. He accepted it all with love. And this is the greatness of Avraham Avinu, and this is what is expected on a certain level from us. We work on it. We work on it. As he says, let me just see how he says it here beautifully also. And that's why he says Hashem sent them the snakes, because the snake is the source of all negativity in the world. And we know what happened with the snake. And it's a very interesting thing that the Medrash tells us. After the snake caused the havoc, the punishment was that it eats sand, right, as we mentioned, and doesn't have taste in any food. So if you think about it, if the snake, what it eats is sand, it's different to other animals. Other animals need other creatures in order to live. So they don't have a choice. They have to kill because that's what they live on. But a snake, why does he have to bite and inject poison into something? For what purpose? For no purpose. No purpose at all, it says. Just to cause harm. Just the damage. That's what it says. It's not as if it needs it. And this is the idea, he says. He says he doesn't even get any benefit from it. In other words, it's like the lowest bad, so to speak. Let me just see. And that's why, and this is the idea, this is the negativity. In other words, that it doesn't recognize the good that Hashem has given it, and it's not satisfied with that. Obviously, sand doesn't taste very good. It's true. And it's boring. It's monotonous. But it's plentiful. And he doesn't recognize that. So instead of recognizing that, he goes and he tries to inject poison into whoever he could. As a person, if we could just accept our lot, it's a hard one, of course, sometimes it's harder than others, but if we could make peace, and if we could feel love, and feel loved, and live with joy, then we live a very different life. And this is what Hashem wants to bring home to them. I just want to see if it has anything about, let me just see, specifically about why it's up there, why you look. But okay, so I'll share with you. I don't know if he says it, but there's I'll tell you something beautiful he says also. That's why this happened right after Aaron passed away. He says also, because what is Aaron? We know. Aaron was incredible. Okay, on every level we know Aaron was incredible. That what was Aaron? Aaron was, I just want to see, because Aaron, as we know, loved every person. That was Aaron. Raid of Shalom, Raid of Shalom. He brought peace between people. And he says that when you bring, and this is a beautiful thing also for before Rosh Hashanah for us to understand, because Rosh Hashanah is a time that we are reconnecting in a deeper way to Hashem. And many times people think that, and it is, it's a serious yontif where we do that. And sometimes we tend to forget that there's also part of Rosh Hashanah is also about the interpersonal. It's not just about us and Hashem, it's about how we relate to other people as well. Because he says, the only way that we can have a connection with Hashem is when we have a connection with each other. So Aaron shows us that. What did Aaron do? He brought love between one Jew and another. And when there is love between one Jew and another, he says, that actually brings us to loving Hashem. So there's many reasons of how it connects. I mean, many, many different explanations. But even just on a simple level, as the Baal Shem Tov said, if you don't love somebody's child, well, that person, you don't love that person. It just doesn't work that way. So if you don't love Hashem's children, how could you say you love Hashem? It doesn't work that way. You can't come to God and say, I love you, and at the same time have this big bragus with your neighbor. It doesn't work like that. Hashem cannot accept that's not It's just not possible. So first you make peace with the people around you. And then you come to Hashem and say, I love all your children. Well, then Hashem says, okay, then you really love me, obviously. And then there is this deep connection. So you can see here, he says, that's what happened here. Aaron passes away and they start to fall apart a little bit. You know, this starts to, you know, all the different arguments start to rise up again. And then we come to this, all this complaints, and then we don't accept what Hashem wants, and not happy with our life, and everything starts to be all kinds of grumbles, and it's all a lot of negativity. And then when we don't make peace and we're not happy, it's not just making peace, but it's not even, he says it even stronger, not happy with the lot that Hashem gives us, well, that leads to the worst thing possible. But when we do make peace and we are happy and we accept our lot, that is the greatest gift that could be, and that enables us. And that's where we lead to the next, I'll just share with you one more point. There's so many beautiful ones. To the next. So just one beautiful thing, like in Chassidus, it explains very, very deeply, but he says, what's the idea of looking up at this, you know, snake up there, this copper snake? Because what we're meant to do when we look at things in life is look a lot deeper, right, as we're talking about now. So everything in its source is good, because everything comes from Hashem. So it, unfortunately, takes on different forms as it comes down here. And we're not saying there isn't bad, because there is. Nobody can deny that there's suffering and there's negativity in this world. There's no question about it. But in its original source, it all comes from Hashem. Now, again, this is a hard thing for us, but here it was brought home to the Jewish people. If you look up and you start to see the source, even the snake has a source above, right? That's why he hung the snake up there. Even the copper fiery snake has a source in Hashem. And the example that's brought, and this also really should be developed on its own, but just very quickly, the Zohar brings a very beautiful example that I think can give a little bit of perspective. He says like this, that when Hashem created the world, right, he wants us to have free choice. So what does he do? Let's say he gives an example of a king and a son, a prince. This is the example the Zohar gives. And the king wants to bring out the best in his son. But if you don't test somebody, you don't know if they are good or not. You don't know because you haven't tested it. So what does he do? He hires a woman and he tells her that she should please try very, very hard, her utmost, to seduce the son. Okay. And this is her job. Now, this woman who he hires is very close to the king and actually loves the king and is a very devoted servant of the king. So she has to do her job the best way she can. But what does she really want? She really wants the son to tell her to go fly a kite, to tell her to leave. And she's thrilled if he does that. And the Zohar explains, this is really what our Yetzer is. Our Yetzer is an angel from God. That's what, like the Satan. It's God's servant. And really, what does it really want? It really wants us not to listen to it. And when we don't, and when we realize that who is the Yetzer an agent of? Hashem himself. Well, then we see through it. And we don't see it in the negative light. We see that it's there just to cause us a little bit of challenge. And then we're able to overcome that challenge. Now, it's a hard one, but this is the Nechash HaNechashes, the copper fiery serpent, but it's hanging up high. Really, it really all comes from God. And in just one more layer, a very beautiful idea I saw, and I'm not going to do it justice, but this was really preparing them to go into Eretz Yisrael. Because in Israel, we know, and this represents our normal natural life that we all live every day. And in normal natural life, we know that even though, as you say, Rona, there are miracles, and we do experience miracles, but we have to look harder. It doesn't just appear, right? We don't necessarily see it immediately. So it might even appear as a snake initially, right? And then we have to see that really the snake, just like it causes death, can also cause life. We have to have the ability to look deeper at everything and to see that even nature is from God. And this is the idea here, that natural things and everything comes from Hashem. And if Hashem wants, and not only if Hashem wants, Hashem does want, there isn't that there's an opposing force. Like, there's a very beautiful example with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Remember when they were thrown they were actually thrown into the fire. And in heaven, there was a whole, you know, big storm with the malachim. And they said, oh my gosh, these are such great, you know, young people. And all they wanted to do is serve you. And how can you let them burn in the fire? And actually the angel of hail wanted to come down, Yakra, I don't know his name, and to bring hail into the fire. And then it would extinguish the flames. And actually Gavriel, Malach Gavriel, who is the angel of fire, said, no, that's not a good idea.
if you go, well, of course, hail puts out fire. People won't realize it's a miracle. They'll think, well, that's just normal. Hail puts out fire. Me, I'm the angel of fire. I will go within the fire and I will extinguish the fire. The fire will extinguish the fire. What does that represent? Hashem is the one in control of the fire. If Hashem wants the fire to burn, it'll burn. If Hashem wants the fire to cause warmth, it'll cause warmth. If Hashem wants the fire to cause light, it will cause light. If Hashem wants the fire to damage, it will damage. And if He wants the fire to heal, it will heal. It's not the fire. It's Hashem. And that's how we have to look at life. Everything we experience, everything. It's true, some things are easier than others. There's no question. When a simcha comes and when we're healthy, of course that's the best way. But sometimes it's not that way. But everything comes from Hashem. And through everything, not only can we connect to Hashem, but we can grow and we can live and we can truly reveal godliness in this world. And that's really our purpose. So let's hope that we can look at the fiery serpent and realize it's all from Hashem. And this is what our life is all about. But Hashem should give us a year, as we say, Shana Tova Umituka, that we shouldn't have to look too hard. It shouldn't have to be like a snake. Rather, it should be like, I don't know, something beautiful. And it should all be beautiful and warm. And Taka, we should feel and experience things, as we say, B'tayv Hanire V'Haniglin, in a good, revealed way, in a sweet way. So that's what Hashem should give us all, really a sweet year, Himirtz Hashem, for all of us.